Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 159.PR0913, certificate number 31531. Anita Bryant.
Security agent, security agent.
No, no, let him stay.
No.
Let him stay.
Well, at least it's a fruit pie.
Let's pray for him right now, Anita. Let's pray.
Father, I want to ask that you forgive him.
That we love him.
And that we love him, and that we're praying for him. To be delivered from his deviant lifestyle, Father. And I just...
Anita Bryant, do you remember, I mean, you know the name. Does it ring out with special significance to you?
I am like a little young by just a couple years. I'm at the age where I get her confused with former Miss America Bess Meyerson.
Uh-huh.
Because I think they're anagrams.
Oh, sure. Wait a minute. Oh,
no,
wow.
There's not.
Jeez, no. Man, a plan, a canal.
She was like
Erasmus.
Bess Meyerson was like Ed Koch's beard, I think, in New York City politics for a while. But Anita Bryant is a much weirder story.
It is, and her name has, it does ring a loud bell in my mind because I was...
A fan.
I was a super fan. No, I was old enough to have watched this thing go down in real time. Her saga begins in the early 60s. Anita Bryant was a kind of wholesome American Oklahoma gal who presumably was very popular in high school. She had the requisite hair flip, and she believed in the Jesus of the Bible.
Yeah, probably conservative evangelical Oklahoma family, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I mean, I think this might have even been before the term evangelical took on its contemporary.
But that's just because that whole
context.
Part of the country was evangelical. Like, right. You didn't have to have a word for it. Like, if there was somebody who moved in who was not super conservative Christian, then you'd have to invent a word.
Well, in fact, that even was a social movement of that time. This period, the late 50s, early 60s, was the beginning of what we now call the Rust Belt, the decline of the American industrial North and Midwest. Mm-hmm. And the South, the Southern states, I mean, Arizona had a very small population in the 50s because air conditioning wasn't yet ubiquitous and there wasn't any water there.
Yeah, what do you do there?
It didn't really appeal to people. Florida was still kind of a mosquito-ridden backwater. But
there was no Sun Belt.
There wasn't a Sun Belt. That was actually a creation of this time as the Rust Belt developed and people emigrated out of the Northeast and out of the Midwest.
I assume it's the idea of, you know, it's also the jet airplane era and retirement migration becoming a thing.
Right.
Old people can move somewhere where their blood, you know, is not chilled by buffalo winters, But they can still fly up and see the grandkids.
Yeah, and it was also touted as an antidote to hay fever and consumption and tuberculosis to go down into that dry, dry air.
Better name, too. Like, let's say you can choose one of two things.
Tuberculosis belt or sun belt?
Either the sun, giver right. of life and warmth, or rust.
Or rust.
Where would you live? It's tough, but I think a lot of people would choose sunny weather over rust.
They would, and it was considered a wholesome place. And
Disneyland.
That's right. Got Disneyland developed during that time.
Orchards of whatever, as far as the eye can see.
It was pretty imaginary, the Sun Belt, but it also encompassed most of, well, all of the American South, which was already predisposed to conservatism. And it was seen as a kind of healthy antidote to Northeastern decadence. You know, New York was starting to become...
You can say Jews if you want.
Jews, homosexuals...
the counterculture in all its forms.
And also immediately after the war and during the war, there was a very large migration of African Americans from the South to the North and the Northeast. So all these currents, all these migrations and all these different sort of swirling currents of Americans were like all happening during this period.
Like a swirling glass of orange juice.
Like a swirling glass of orange juice. And in this period, in the early 60s, Anita Bryant, she was Miss Oklahoma in the Miss America pageant.
Yeah, first runner-up.
Second runner-up in the Miss America pageant. First, she was Miss Oklahoma.
Right, but she was very nearly Miss America.
Very nearly.
If a bullet had hit Marianne Mobley of Mississippi, God forbid.
God forbid.
Anita Bryant would have had to step in and take the sash. Marianne Mobley, by the way, pretty famous as Miss America's go. Mrs. America? Or Miss America's?
I think it is Mrs. America, although that would be very confusing to say.
I'm sure there was a Mrs. America pageant of young pert married women. Didn't that used to be a thing?
The Mrs. America pageant?
That's right up your alley.
That would be very frustrating, I think, for the married men of the 50s.
Yes, Mrs. America was established in 1976. To honor married women.
Oh, that is sweet. That is right up my alley.
It's been televised on networks including PAX and WE. I don't know if you've been watching.
Is it an ongoing pageant?
It is.
Wow.
From what I can tell.
I feel like I've got a new must-see TV.
Yeah, our reigning Mrs. America is Michaela Eppers, Mrs. Eppers, uh-huh. The former Michaela Deal. She was... Miss Indiana, apparently, when she was still a Miss. Beauty pageants are weird.
Yeah, how would you pronounce Miss, plural of Miss America? How would you pronounce it so that you could differentiate it from Mrs. America?
Well, you would have to say winners of the Miss America pageant, I think.
Right.
Because, what would you call multiple Mrs. Americas? Mrs. America? Like, it's Mrs. America, Miss America, all these beauty pageants are kind of... They're like the Pledge of Allegiance in that if you tried to invent them today, you would get laughed out of the room.
Right.
Right.
But at the time, they were extremely significant.
And yet they still kind of have this cultural legacy where we kind of accept them as just a regular part of civic American life. And nobody's like, wait, you make second graders do a loyalty oath? Wait, you make young women stand up in a bathing suit and you give one of them a prize for being very pretty and playing the auto harp?
I mean, in the 1970s, I remember sitting with my mother and getting ready to watch the Miss America pageant.
Burt Park singing "Here She Is, Miss America" was like that was appointment viewing. That was like the Macy's parade and what else do people watch every year? The Super Bowl.
The Super Bowl, right?
The Oscars.
The yearly airing of the miniseries The Holocaust.
The Holocaust: the miniseries.
But Anita Bryant translated her brush with greatness, her second runner-up in the Miss America contest.
By the way, shout out to Marianne Mobley, who later married actor and TV host Gary Collins and played the mom on the last season of Different Strokes after Dixie Carter bowed out.
Wow, this is the kind of thing that you could only really know by having been...
By having the exact right age.
Not only being the exact right age, but also being sequestered in Korea with only one television station.
Dixie Carter played Conrad Bain's wife on the penultimate season of Different Strokes, and then she was abruptly replaced by Marianne Mobley. Dixie Carter and Marianne Mobley later played rivals on Designing Women, too, so their lives are interwoven.
My goodness, what it would be like to be inside your head, just rummaging around, opening drawers, and all these, like, all these strange, like, stuffed animals and Raggedy Ann dolls that are in there.
It's not just random. I have an agenda here. I think it's shameful that we were celebrating Anita Bryant when she finished second place to Marianne Mobley. She's a second-rate Marianne Mobley. Why isn't Marianne Mobley in the omnibus?
I know. Well, Marianne Mobley may one day be in the omnibus. I leave it to you. But Anita Bryant actually became a pop star of the early 60s. Not really a chart-storming pop star, but she had a number five hit with a tune called Paper Roses.
Paper roses, paper roses. Oh, how real those roses seem to be. But they're only...
Later covered with greater success by Marie Osmond.
Marie Osmond had a number one hit on the country charts with Paper Roses in the 1970s.
I feel like I need to stick up for my people here, who apparently are Mormon pop stars and Marianne Mobley.
Well, if this is a further endorsement of Mormonism, that a Mormon pop star could take this to number one, where a secular, or a, I'm sorry, a
Evangelical,
Baptist one can only get to number five.
We're clearly five times better.
Mm-hmm. Clearly.
That's how the math works on that.
There's that Latter-day Saints math that I use to calculate all my payments to contractors.
That's how you work out who's getting into heaven or not. You got to look at highest Billboard chart position.
But Anita Bryant was attractive and bubbly, vivacious. She had a...
Is she a good singer? I've never heard any of these songs.
She's a fine singer. I mean, she certainly... She earned those middling chart hits based on her talent rather than some other factor.
As pageant people will tell you to death, I had a friend whose sister was a pageant girl and maybe a state runner-up. It's not just about appearance.
You know? No.
It's all about talent and poise. Appearance is just, I mean, it's an accident that these all happen to be conventionally pretty girls every year.
I wish more of us were graded on poise.
Sure. Nobody has ever graded me on poise as far as I know, to my knowledge.
Well, I don't know. That's part of the reason you're here in Omnibus. I could have co-hosted this show with any quiz winner.
Quiz show poise.
But you have poise.
I guess I mean more like poise getting on a bus, for example.
Right.
Nobody's ever like, nice job. They just say it sarcastically. If you have bad poise, nice job.
Well, I mean, I think I get often graded on the basis of sang-froid.
You are a rock musician. That's the one profession in America that is graded on poise.
Yeah. Well, and Daring Do. I'm 7 out of 10 with Daring Do.
I'm guessing there's not a whole lot of Daring Do.
Well, not anymore. Really?
That's Daring Do is a younger man's game?
Well, I don't know. I just went on a 6-day motorcycle ride around Oregon. There's a certain amount of Daring Do to that.
It's only Daring Do if you're solving mysteries or, you know, or some kind of... I feel like Daring Do has to involve some level of acrobatics.
At some point, you have to grab a rope or a vine and swing from one cliff to another.
Did your motorcycle ever jump anything?
No, I tried very hard to keep both wheels on the ground.
Did it ever jump over the snapping jaws of any animal? Alligator, shark...
No, I think before I got on this motorcycle, some earlier rider may have jumped it over a shark.
You could just kind of sense the vibe was still there.
I did. Well, you could, I mean, Pinky Tuscadero had carved her initials in the back fender, so I knew something had happened. Anyway, so Anita Bryant being a kind of America's sweetheart type in the late 70s, she married her manager, who was a disc jockey in Miami-Dade.
As was the style at the time.
That was the style at the time.
Marry your manager, some guy in a turtleneck and a blazer.
And the two of them kind of had that sort of, like, America's couple. They weren't quite Sonny and Cher, but they were...
They were kind of a made-for-TV Elvis and Priscilla.
Yeah.
Downmarket Southern charm.
Yeah, that's right. And Anita parlayed this into a spokesperson role for the Florida Orange Growers Association.
Let me tell you firsthand, that is the dream for a C-list celebrity. Like, that's a check that just keeps on coming.
If I could be the spokesperson for literally anything, the Washington Gooey Duck Farmers Association, I would jump at the chance.
No matter how disreputable, you would do the ads.
What is a disreputable organization that I would not do, that I would not be a spokesperson for?
What if you were like the Preparation H guy? What if it's like diarrhea medication? John Roderick from The Long Winters. You know, when I'm about to go on stage for a show and then diarrhea.
I don't know. I feel like I could convert that into a thing that I could stand up with a straight face and do.
It depends on the size of the check.
Yeah. I mean, the guy from the Verizon thing who's, you know, they like, can you hear me now guy? I think he made us fortune from that. And I mean, you can see he's miserable after the first 6 months of those ads.
His dead eyes.
For the 10 years after that, he's just miserable.
He's got those dead black Carson Daly eyes. Ugh. Just staring at you.
Can you hear me now?
But you know, that guy had the genius move of starting a bidding war and going to work for his competitor.
Yeah.
You know, and doing a version of the phrase and being like, I got out. I used to say, did you hear me now? But now I say, at the moment, can you hear me? And that's why you need to switch providers, because you didn't care about Verizon. You just cared about me.
Cared about him.
Verizon guy.
Whether or not his call is clear.
Follow me to Pring or Prong or whatever his outfit is now.
But Anita was she had a religious conviction. She was living in...
About orange juice?
Not about orange juice necessarily, but orange juice had undergone an interesting American arc as well. During World War II, orange juice concentrate was very popular with soldiers. And after the war...
Let me ask, was it not a consumer product before that? People just drank fresh squeeze.
Well, and oranges were not a ubiquitous presence in American kitchens.
I see.
Because, yeah, they were delicate fruit. They required transport in hot, sweaty trucks. And by the time they got to your kitchen table, they had become mealy. I'm just guessing. I don't remember what it was like to try and eat an orange in 1936.
How can an orange be mealy?
Well, you know what it's like.
It can kind of be crusty.
You know, an orange that no longer has the sort of, it's no longer plump with juice, but it becomes a kind of like chewy almost.
Right.
It becomes a labor to eat.
I don't like orange juice.
Really?
Yeah. And it's not just because I deplore everything Anita Bryant stands for.
But wait, you're so wholesome. How do you not like orange juice?
Orange juice is not the wholesome drink of choice. Milk is the mild-mannered, wholesome American's drink of choice.
Wait, do you drink glasses of milk?
I always have a big, tall glass of milk in front of me here in the bunker as we do the show. 2%.
Is that what that is? I thought it was Metamucil. Milk?
On TV, they always used to say, part of a balanced breakfast, and they'd show somebody drinking a big glass of milk and a big glass of orange juice. Like,
yeah.
To have a balanced breakfast, you needed to drink like half a gallon of fluids, apparently.
Yeah, well, and like half of it is sugar water, and half of it is like the weird mucus of a domesticated cow.
Yeah, I never bought orange juice being particularly healthy. It's just sugar. And here, what I didn't like about it was, I felt it like it was too sour. It was... Yeah. It kind of made me like mucusy. It made me phlegmy to drink orange juice.
Interesting. Interesting reaction.
You think that's just me?
I'm not sure. I don't equate phlegmy. Are you sure it wasn't the milk? Because it sounds like you were drinking both.
Maybe I have a mild allergy.
But orange juice was sort of advertised as a healthy drink, just like chicken was
Vitamin
at
C.
one point in time.
Wait, you're telling me chicken was marketed as a healthy drink? Chicken juice.
For futurelings, they're recalling back to 2900.
All the chicken puree packs into their life pods.
When Tyson was selling chicken milkshakes.
Just hook it up to your veins.
Yeah. So Anita had this job as spokesperson for Florida Oranges.
She would go on ads and sing about the benefits of wholesome orange juice.
Yeah, and it really felt like during the late 60s, we had riots in American cities, Detroit was burning, but here was Anita Bryant, and also Vietnam War and protests in the streets.
But here's an alternative.
Here's an alternative. A darling little gal, former Miss America contestant, who lives down in wholesome Florida where there are no problems whatsoever, and drinking that delicious orange juice. And for 3 years running, she was voted Good Housekeeping's most admired woman in America.
Really?
Yeah.
Forget Lady Bird Johnson or whoever.
Right. No,
sorry,
Anita Bryant.
Sorry, Rosa Parks. Anita Bryant is singing about orange juice.
That's right. And I think personified a kind of wholesome American that people at the time of a certain sort, even then, lamented was being lost to modernity and the decadence of
the counterculture.
The counterculture.
Good Housekeeping is being read by hippie-hating 40-year-old moms.
That's right. And Anita Bryant was their shining star. Yeah. But during this period, Anita Bryant went from being just a lovable, carefree Southern Christian woman who was making $400,000 or the equivalent of $400,000 a year hawking orange juice to someone who was slightly more radicalized. And there were a few events that pushed her over the edge. The first
she was kidnapped by the Symbionese Liberation Army.
No, they weren't operating in Florida. Not yet.
The Florida chapter was very small. No, what radicalized Anita?
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The first recorded instance of Anita Bryant becoming politically active was in protest of a Jim Morrison concert. The Doors were playing in Florida, and Jim was right. Wearing tight pants, and he was being pursued by obscenity suits. There's the one famous one where apparently he exposed himself to an audience, although the blurry photograph offered as proof shows the back of someone's head just sort of conveniently covering Jim Morrison's...
Covering up the Lizard King.
That's right, apparent exposure of his lizard. He was very drunk during this time, and so a little bit unpredictable on stage.
And this was in her backyard. That show took place in Florida.
That's right.
And to this day, Ray Manzarek will tell you Jim didn't actually pull it out.
Nope.
In the Oliver Stone movie, he doesn't do it.
Nope.
But there are eyewitnesses in the crowd to this day who say, and Ray will say it's hypnosis. It's the shamanism of the great Jim Morrison.
Sure. Yeah. That's
he made everyone see the Lizard King when it wasn't actually there.
Jim did dare to dance the shaman's dance, according to Manzarek.
But this followed him around the country. It led to obscenity and lewdness charges.
And Anita was sort of right at the fore of the Florida chapter protesting the Doors' performance.
Sure, there was a rally for decency, yes, at which old-timey stars like Kate Smith and the Lettermen rallied around this idea that the Doors were bad. And honestly, that's the only right-wing charity I would ever donate to is one premised on the Doors being bad.
Look, as a rock musician who came up in the shadow of the Doors, let's say, because we have all lived in the shadow of the Doors, it's the one instance where I agree with Anita Bryant. The Doors should have been prohibited.
And that concludes entry... All right, that was good.
Yeah, thanks.
Anita Bryant, hero.
Thanks. Well, no, she failed. She failed utterly. I still hear the Doors all the time. Every time I walk into a mall, they're up there playing. You know, you can just barely hear Jim like, Mama, I want to. Just selling blenders.
It's true. She did not successfully ban the Doors.
No, And this was a period where the schism between the North and the South and between conservative America or traditional America and counterculture America was really, the schism was really happening in real time. And 1969 was when the Stonewall riots happened in New York City, and it was the first sort of shot across the bow of mainstream America that gay people were going to become visible. They were going to start demanding civil rights, which up until that point, you know,
Did not exist.
Gay communities throughout America had always been, I mean, they were persecuted by the cops, but they were generally accepted, just as they are now in Mexico, as a kind of, that was like something that was happening downtown in a few seedy
unusual
bars.
Unusual part of the landscape. That's people right. are strange, as Jim Morrison would say.
People are strange when you're a stranger, Ken.
That's true.
But this was the Stonewall riots where the Stonewall bar was raided by the cops. And the patrons took to the streets to protest the brutality. This was the beginning of the gay rights movement in America. And it happened coincident with the very beginning of the radicalization of Anita Bryant.
The social conscience of Anita Bryant. And it didn't take long, just in a few years after the Stonewall riots, kind of a consensus had emerged that there was an enlightened way to handle these laws. And about 40 American cities had passed kind of rudimentary LGBT non-discrimination laws. You could not be fired or evicted or whatever for being gay. And that's surprising to me that it happened that quickly, at least in America's cities.
It's very difficult from our current standpoint to put ourselves in the 1970s in America, because it's very easy for us to look back and think that we are the most progressive time, that we are the most woke era. And in the 1970s, George Wallace ran for the U.S. presidency multiple times on a straight-up white supremacist ticket.
And won states.
Full-on racist, not even masking it, not even David Duke pretending he wasn't, but like a white supremacist ticket. But at the same time, the 1970s were the birth of what we think of now as modern progressivism, and a lot of inroads were made into mainstream America. It was not an era of great religiosity. This was the New York Times said God is dead. Religious?
Did they have a source on that?
I think it was Paul Simon.
Yeah, cover of Time magazine. God is dead.
God is dead.
Boy, that must have canceled a lot of subscriptions.
Well, I mean, a lot of subscriptions from people that weren't reading it anyway. A lot of dentists stopped carrying it in their office in Mobile, Alabama.
I feel like Time and National Geographic, when I was a kid, always knew that religion sold. It was always like, yeah, we just have to have no matter what's happening in the news, we're going to put the Virgin Mary on the cover of Time 6 times a year.
Yeah, the Virgin Mary on a piece of toast.
I'm sure there's a lot of big news happening right now in the Virgin Mary's life that we have to catch up on. A lot of updates there.
But there was a sense during this period, a wave of the secularization of the United States. And it wasn't just the urban elites. It was a sense that not the practice of religion necessarily, but like frantic devotion to religion was a thing of the past. It was a thing of the, it was evidence of less education, less sophistication.
It's backwoodsy. We want well-behaved suburban religiosity.
And this wasn't just true of Baptist religions. It was also true of Catholicism and Judaism. All the religions were experiencing downturns in attendance, and it was just seen as like, now we're in the United States, we're past wars of religion, and we're moving into this new a new future that is more enlightened and more educated.
As I understand it, the battle lines were not as drawn as hard politically between this idea that there's good religious people and, you know, kind of suspect a-religious people. You know, there were...
The battle lines weren't. No, in fact, Jimmy Carter was a Baptist.
Sure. Like the idea that all religion is vocally anti-abortion is very much a kind of a Reagan Revolution creation.
Well, all of this was a product of the backlash to this 1970s sense. Right. And, you know, Republicans at the time were largely sort of socially agnostic. They were primarily like an economic doctrine. They wanted taxes to be structured a certain way. They were hawkish about foreign policy, but Republicans didn't really have this moral component that we think of them having now.
They were not culture warriors.
And Democrats often were
racists.
earlier, but the Democratic coalition included a lot of religious people and people that were quite devout.
And the South, it was the default political party of the South.
Yeah, up until Johnson did his little switcheroo on them.
That's what you call the Civil Rights Act, a switcheroo?
Which we can, well, you know, his little
Texas two-step,
his little game, his little game with the Senate. So as the 70s progress, as you mentioned, right, there were 40 American cities that passed anti-discrimination laws in favor of gay rights.
It was a movement.
It was a subtle movement. There was not an institutionalized, organized gay rights movement across the country with identifiable leaders and a clear agenda. This was happening just as part of a general liberalization of domestic politics.
How should a well-run city treat this problem area? Here are some sensible guidelines.
That's right. Sensible. It seemed very sensible that rather than waste police resources and blood, sweat, and tears over persecuting a minority that was actually contributing to the culture of the city, like, let's do away with these arcane laws. Mm-hmm. But this offended, as you can imagine,
Anita Bryant,
a certain segment of the people, among whom Anita Bryant stepped to the front ranks, because a similar law was proposed for Miami and Dade County. And from the pulpit, a lot of ministers in the region started to bring attention to it, although it was poised to pass sort of without notice. Some ministers started to rail from the pulpit, and one of them in particular had Anita Bryant as a parishioner.
This must have been organized on some level. Somebody in some office somewhere noticed, wow, Houston just passed one of these. Like, it's going to start happening in the South.
At this point, it wasn't. It became the
really?
Sort of
no Falwell type is
not
like
yet. Huh. It was just a couple of ministers in Florida realized that this was something that they could rail about from the pulpit. And this was during an era when people that were opposed to gay rights equated gay rights with child molestation and pederasty. It was very easy to smear gay rights because there was a lot of ignorance in the population as a whole.
I feel like Anita Bryant, who, you know, gave awful quotes along those lines for decades, should have known better. She was from the entertainment industry. There's no way she didn't have a gay makeup guy and a gay hairdresser and, you know, she must have had friends.
But this was during the time when Liberace could be Liberace and still deny that he was gay.
In people's living rooms, they could say, oh, he's just flamboyant.
But
people who knew Liberace were like, yeah, sure.
Well,
The entertainment industry is super gay.
But Hollywood is sophisticated in a way that mainstream America isn't. It was still shocking that Elton John was gay when he came. I mean, Elton John got married in the 1980s.
Elton John pretending to be bi for many years.
Even Rob Halford of Judas Priest coming out as gay in the 2000s took many people by surprise.
Metal fans.
Because it just hadn't occurred to them. The lack of sophistication isn't always bigotry. It often is just ignorance.
It still hasn't happened in sports.
That's right. Name a gay football player. Yeah. So Anita Bryant and her, and at the time a pretty small cadre, went and protested at the city council. And in fact, the ordinance was proposed by Anita Bryant's friend, Ruth Stack, who was just a local politician. And up until that point, they'd never had any real disagreements. But Ruth put forth this, what she considered to be just a reasonable ordinance to change the laws in favor of equal rights for gays and lesbians. And even then, there wasn't a concept even of transgender people, and lesbians weren't included in the ordinance either because they were sort of, it didn't, they weren't. It,
they're volleyball coaches or whatever. Yeah, gay men, they're the threat.
They're the threat. People weren't entirely sure that lesbianism was real. It seemed like something that happened in college.
I wonder if that's a result of just a more male-centric culture where, you know, masculinity defines America, so anything that threatens masculinity is much more deadly than whatever lesbians represent.
Yeah, although you could argue that women who weren't interested in men threatened masculinity
in practice
a lot more than
they were not playing the long game, I guess.
I think you don't want to stereotype, but the public expression of lesbianism just tends to be less flamboyant. there aren't as many feathers, let's say.
It could certainly be a fact that there's a titillating aspect to lesbianism that flatters a certain kind of even old-fashioned male audience.
In a way that
encourages the culture to give them a pass because
there's what are described as lipstick lesbians, which is to say femme lesbians, do appeal to a large swath of the American men turned into fantasy.
And I wonder if that's kind of fundamental to we're going to give them a pass. What we really are going to go after are these swishy hairdressers. Yeah,
that's right. Well, and it was always the animosity toward gay men was always connected to pedophilia.
Anita actually named her organization Save Our Children. Until the Save the Children Foundation shut her down, I guess.
They had the copyright on saving children.
There was already an NGO fund who was like, we're actually saving them from a real thing that exists, floods and earthquakes.
So the ordinance actually passed, despite Anita and her nascent protest organization. Miami got their non-discrimination law. And at that point, Anita and her sort of celebrity and her vocal opposition to it, all of her proclamations that the children were in danger, but also that the legislation, and we still hear this argument today, the legislation was inherently anti-Christian. It prohibited her from teaching her or from raising her children in a moral world.
This is the new argument against gay rights.
It was discriminatory against moral people.
We have to use the language of discrimination to say, I, as a white Christian, am deeply offended. I'm the real victim here.
That's right. And part of her argument was her children attended private Christian school, but this ordinance allowed openly gay people to be teachers. And so she felt threatened that her Baptist school was going to hire a gay choir teacher and that teacher would then recruit her students into their gay sex cult.
The recruitment is a big deal, I guess. She would go around the country saying things like, homosexuals cannot biologically reproduce children, therefore they must recruit our children.
They're recruiting them.
Which is the craziest logic to me. Like, there's plenty of replacement among gay populations. You know how? Straight people giving birth to gay kids. Like, there's going to be plenty of gay kids. We don't have to make them.
But this is a modern understanding that being gay is biological.
It's true. Like, if you believe that everybody's straight until preyed upon, by the gay agenda.
Because at the time, the DSM 3 or 2 or whatever it was, I mean, the actual manual of psychological disorders promulgated by the American Psychiatric Institute it described homosexuality as a product of a overbearing mother and an unattentive father. I mean, it continued to describe homosexuality
I just realized I'm gay then. Actually, I'm 2 for 2.
I didn't want to say anything.
Sure. If you treat it as if it's a disorder, then you
can cure it. If it's a disorder and a thing that you can be tempted into, and that's always been the confusing thing to me.
Right.
If you can be tempted into it, then that must mean it sounds pretty good or it's like pretty fun over there.
They have way better parties, way better clubs, way better brunches.
Otherwise, it wouldn't be so tempting.
Our friend Dan Savage, I think, is among those who has pointed out that for many on the right, the idea, to always be promulgating the idea that sexuality is chosen and orientation is chosen strongly implies that they themselves were on the fence and are like, okay, you know what? I'm not doing this.
Come on.
I'm going to stay in the closet with,
that's right.
I'm going to marry Karen just like mom wants.
Pick the one that doesn't sin.
And I think that's why you get a lot of these deeply closeted Republican congressmen getting up to shenanigans in restroom stalls.
You're talking about the wide stance.
Well, I wish Larry, what was that guy's name? Larry.
Flint.
Every time I'm in the Minneapolis airport, I go to his stall.
Oh, you do?
It's not super cruisy.
Does it have a plaque? Larry Craig. You're talking about Larry Craig,
right? I wish Larry Craig were the only such case. It's an epidemic the most fire and brimstone crusaders
get caught
with a 14-year-old boy.
Right, with their pants down.
In some cases, literally. Oh, wait, that was the joke.
That's all right. I'll just throw these notes away. I'll just throw all my jokes away if you're going to explain them.
Twitter has taught me that the best thing you can do when someone tells you a joke is to explain the premise back to them.
I see. Yeah, that's right.
It's helpful.
That's like 30% of your feed, isn't it? Well, so Anita becomes the sort of catalyst behind what very quickly becomes a national movement, and a very organized national movement. She becomes the darling of the PTL club, and a very young Jerry Falwell just getting off to his start. And
you've got pastors who are also well-off entertainers who can start pumping money into this thing and promoting it.
And this becomes a thing that they can, this is a recruitment tool for them. There was a famous ad during the Super Bowl where the Orange Bowl parade was contrasted with the San Francisco Gay Pride Parade, where they would show, they'd show a little scene of like wholesome American teens spinning their batons and swirling their cheerleader skirts. And then they would cut to a shot of a man in leather chaps, twirling his baton.
They're both baton twirlers.
It was, and this, you know, scandalized people who maybe prior to that would have been sort of live and let live. There was a poll taken in the early 70s and a majority of American women, felt like gay rights were just a natural extension of where we were evolving politically. And this campaign was targeted at people who maybe were just generally sort of live and let live. But when they saw this contrast between this wonderful America of yore and this escape from New York future.
Well, that's a great bit of rhetorical sleight of hand that the right has pulled for, that the forces of repression have pulled for centuries, which is to kind of make these, a whole population of people live in secrecy and shame. And then, you know, when the results of that are a crazy parade, to like totally ridicule them for that as well. You know, like it didn't have to be this tawdry demimonde. Like we made that.
That's right. And we see it even today. I mean, it is the xenophobes always find a scapegoat, always find the most exaggerated version of a thing. And it does become galvanizing. This was...
Sure, it's an enemy. Like, that's always nice.
And this was the beginning, really, of what we now think of as this enormous juggernaut in American cultural life, which is what we call the Christian right. Up until that point, there was not really an organized Christian right, not since the early part of the century when there was that kind of Civil War revisionism, where a lot of those statues of Robert E. Lee that they're now tearing down.
Right. 1920s Confederate nostalgia.
That's right.
And Klan revival.
There was that Klan revival of the 20s where the Ku Klux Klan was marching down Broadway in New York City.
Every mayor in America was a member of the Ku Klux Klan at that time. It's a crazy fact. But
you know, I get yelled at for inserting a lot of extra consonants into my words, but you just said Ku Klux Klan. And I would like this noted. I would like a post on our Facebook page about this.
I would like to have the court stenographer read back that testimony.
If I say Soviet... Yeah, you know, like my L is either...
That's true. I stole the L from your Soviet and I put it in Ku Klux Klan.
You ripped the L from my letter sweater and turned Ku into Clue.
Taking the letter L from his varsity sweater. Nobody is getting our electric company references.
Well, and that's a Bill Cosby impression you just did.
It's actually not. It's Joan Rivers as the narrator.
Oh.
And have we done this on the show?
No, we haven't talked about the electric company.
It's Zero Mostel as the Spellbinder and Gene Wilder as Letterman. And I think even a lot of people our age don't know that.
Oh my goodness, I didn't know it. Well, let's go back. We'll do Electric Company and Free to Be You and Me. Talk about all the celebrity voices.
Free to Be You and Me. That's the thing that turned everybody our age gay.
Me, for sure. Am I a boy or a girl?
100% me.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. And if you know my husband, Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Goodbye, Truckee.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other Truckee.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.
So this group, this like fast moving conservative rights movement, let's call it.
That's nice.
Passed a, or rather gathered signatures, arrived at the office with a suitcase bulging with signatures.
What's the office? Miami City Hall? Is this a municipal?
I think it was the Miami City Council and demanded that there be a public referendum. And then they were very well funded. And the gay rights movement, again, at this point, was not really nationally organized. I think gay rights were largely seen as just an inevitable consequence. And I think gay people were expressing this individually in various cities. There was a lot more openness.
Well, plus, yeah, visibility, it was tricky back then. I mean, organizing as a gay movement is tricky. A lot of your natural civic leaders are deeply closeted or don't want the attention.
But in cities like San Francisco and Seattle and Chicago and very prominently Miami, like gay communities were finding a measure of visibility and freedom. But what they didn't have was a political advocacy. They didn't see themselves as a political movement yet. And
there was no out gay politicians.
Right. But there was also no sense that you could pass legislation beyond this kind of repeal of anti-gay law. There wasn't like a national movement to enshrine gay rights. Mm-hmm. And up until that point, there hadn't needed to be because, I mean, look at the success that had happened. But now they were blindsided by this conservative movement. And when this measure was put up to a public vote, gay rights were rescinded in Miami-Dade County by a 70-30% vote in the electorate.
Oh, wow. So a lot of these city council laws were ahead of where the people were.
Well, or the conservative anti-gay movement was able to direct a lot of people to the polls that maybe wouldn't have normally gone. And there wasn't a similarly well-funded...
Yeah. If it's only a crusade on one side...
That's right.
I got to get to the polls to vote for this anti-discrimination law that does not affect me. Yeah.
And a lot of the people who would have happily accepted gay rights were not prepared to race to the polls to defend it. It was more of they would have accepted a status quo, but it wasn't regarded as part of their fight.
I actually remember when you say that women in particular were going to be very live and let live on issues like this. I remember around our dining room table as a kid, my dad would kind of be muttering about, well, are we going to let them start adopting?
Right.
And it would be my mom who was like, you wouldn't let a gay couple adopt? And my dad would be like, no. And she'd be like, well, what about Neil and Jim? You know, she'd mention some gay couple they knew and he'd grumble.
Well, they're okay.
Yeah, exactly. And it really is like, you know, as soon as you know a couple and there's a face, then it's much harder to think about the faceless evil enemy out there plotting.
That's right. As long as you know a couple and they are out, right? And they're not just they're not just roommates or something that you can deny their existence. But this became...
So then, Anita gets a win.
Anita gets a win, but what happens is this experience in Florida galvanizes the gay rights movement nationwide. Harvey Milk was active in sort of combating this. Harvey Milk and his San Francisco cohort responded to this by banning orange juice boycotting orange juice in San Francisco bars.
Banning orange juice is a bit much.
Banning orange juice would be hard to do, but boycotting it was quite easy. And so nationally...
And it had a clever parallel to the great boycott in favor of Cesar Chavez and the strike in Mexican farmers. So this really is like, this is what the energized left does now. We boycott some kind of fruit.
We boycott fruit. And the Florida orange juice people had done a really great job of creating a lot of cocktails that used orange juice, not just the Tequila Sunrise, but also the Harvey Wallbanger and all these different concoctions.
I studied these for Jeopardy. That's a screwdriver with Galliano added.
Really? Yes. Give me some more orange juice-based cocktails.
Well, I mean, the boycott's really going to hit the gays where it hurts when it comes to breakfast, because it's mimosas, you know? It's brunch. And so that is a real sacrifice.
Well, and there was a movement to substitute grapefruit juice, which works in some cocktails and not in others. Vodka grapefruit is a little bit...
Grapefruit mimosa.
Yeah, not as good. And also, we know now, I mean, the bipolar medication that I take is contraindicated with grapefruit juice.
Wait, really?
Somehow the grapefruit juice blocks and messes with your absorption of certain chemicals.
In a way that other citrus juices do not.
That's right. So I am forbidden, as someone who takes this medication, forbidden from drinking grapefruit juice or having it even as any component.
Can you have Fresca?
That's interesting. I don't think there's any actual grapefruit in Fresca.
That does align with my intuition, and I think most people's intuition, that there is something kind of weird and off about grapefruit juice that is not shared with other citrus fruits. That weird kind of stomach bile taste.
Certainly my daughter thinks that grapefruit juice does not qualify in the same family as orange juice. But so along with a grapefruit or along with an orange juice boycott, there was now within the gay world and their many, many supporters, more vocal supporters, a sense that they needed to be organized. And this sort of was one of the impetus that pushed Harvey Milk into a political career. And unfortunately, he was assassinated just a few years later.
But she awoke a sleeping and very gay giant.
She did, but also awoke a sleeping and very anti-gay giant. So fast forward a couple of years, the boycott against orange juice and the politicization of orange juice.
I'm not going to let you just get away with adding syllables to politicization or whatever you just said.
Now you just said politicization.
I think politicization might be right.
Politicalization. Politicalization.
There's no way it's politicalization.
It's politicization.
It is politicization.
Politicization.
You said
politicization.
It was the right number of syllables though.
Politicization.
You get points for having the right number of syllables.
But is like really
pretty. It's trouble. Awkward. That's why we should not say that. We should say
politicizing. Politicization.
Just say politicizing.
Of orange juice. So the orange juice growers were like, hey, I know you're kind of operating on your own time, but you're like the face of orange juice. And this is, it's not just the boycott, which, because then, of course, the conservatives were like, drink more Harvey Wallbangers. And there was actually, I think, for briefly, was like an upsurge in the gross amount of orange juice being consumed.
I like how her bosses are like, I know you think that either the kingdom of heaven or American civil rights are at stake, but there's bigger fish to fry here. Orange juice.
Orange
sales.
Juice. And there was an organized campaign to have her removed. And she responded to that with a very victimized sense that the gays were now trying to silence her by depriving her of her livelihood.
It's a free speech issue now, man.
That's right, free speech issue. But eventually she was fired as spokesperson of the Florida Orange Community.
Same month Harvey Milk was shot, so, you know, we can see who the real victims are.
Well, and this is, you know, this became a dichotomous political schism that became a big feature in American political life, because this also coincided with the election of Ronald Reagan. And Ronald Reagan, during this period, there was a similar movement to repeal gay rights laws in California. And this repeal movement actually scored some big gains. They repealed this law in Eugene, Oregon. They repealed it sort of in multiple places, but they were unsuccessful in Washington. And Ronald Reagan, during his campaign for president, actually came out against the repeal of the gay rights laws because he was a compassionate conservative.
Right.
But then he became president and found that the support of the moral majority and this burgeoning conservative Christian movement was actually a big part of his political coalition. So Anita Bryant's, you know, little housewifey indignation at the idea that gay teachers would be touching her kids' hair.
Hypothetical kids? Did she have kids?
She did. She had multiple kids, and they were all in a private religious school. She spawned both of these political movements. Now, increasing her tragedy, she filed for divorce in 1980. And this was after promoting herself for this period as someone who believed that marriage was inviolate, that marriage was forever, and her status as a Christian spokeswoman sort of included this idea that she had this happy marriage with multiple kids, and they were a Christian ideal. And in filing for divorce against her husband with an accusation of mental cruelty and several sort of accusations at the time, this being before a time when there was no fault divorce, I think. Wait a minute, no, this is post no fault divorce.
That's cusp of that.
She suddenly lost her support from the Christian conservatives, who felt
that would certainly not happen today. I mean,
now you can.
If you're on the right side of the culture war,
you can
really do whatever you want.
Really get peed on by as many Russian prostitutes as you can afford.
But also, I think the expectation is no longer that any entertainer of any ideology will stay with a spouse. I mean, the expectations about divorce are probably different now than they were then.
A lot of things have changed, but she was abandoned by the Christian movement that she ostensibly began, and fell into a kind of, her name on the left became synonymous with bigotry. Mm-hmm. Anita Bryant was a shorthand for a kind of person who was hateful. And despite her many protestations that she was not bigoted nor hateful, but simply acting out of love
about the children,
for the children, she was reviled by fully half the electorate.
And even pied at one point.
At one point, she got pied in the face with
an IRS. She's like the first famous person to ever take a pie in the face.
She invented being pied as a political act.
She was pied by a gay guy, and then she said, well, at least it was a fruit pie. She was able to come up with a kind of a funny homophobic slur while wiping whipped cream from her face. So, you know, good under pressure.
Often described as the one witty thing she ever said.
And that concludes Anita Bryant, entry 159.PR0913, certificate number 31531, in the omnibus. Futurelings, we want to advise you to stay away from social media. It will do you and your society no good, as we have discovered. In our day, we were less enlightened, and as a result, John and I were enthusiasts for the technology.
Initially we were, but now we realize it has corrupted us. I realize it more than Ken, because Ken gets more likes than I get.
I think I hate it just as much as you. I just have no intestinal fortitude. I don't know how to quit it.
What's interesting is that you have, I think, overall a cheerier mane than I do. And so when you get attacked, you brush it off. I watch you do it. You get attacked and you go,
oh, these guys.
Lol.
Did you see the news yesterday about research out of Germany showing that when Facebook goes up in a specific locale, like, you can immediately see anti-immigrant sentiment and violence go up? So yeah, you know, social media is just a tool to turn us all into brainwashed demons from some Marvel Comics crossover event.
Well, it really is garbage, but I don't think it's a tool. It's simply an aperture. Like, the garbage that is in us all, I think, you know, civilization to a large degree has been a series of laws and mores to suppress the garbage people we actually are, by insisting that we wear our hats a certain way, and that we wear ties to work, and that we walk when the crosswalk says walk. And social media was this ungoverned and anarchic place where we were free to anonymously express what truly barbaric apes we are when we take our shirts off. And I think it needs to go down the tubes and go back to a time when you had to raise your hand to speak. I know that's unpopular with the internet libertarians, but...
But if that doesn't happen...
Yeah, which it won't.
You can find us at Omnibus Project on every social media platform that exists.
Omnibus, at Omnibus Project,
at
Twitter,
Omnibus Project,
Facebook, Snapchat,
MySpace,
not really Snapchat,
Grindr. I am at Ken Tinder. Jennings, not on Grindr, but on
The League,
Twitter.
Are you familiar with The League?
What is The League?
The League is a dating platform that you have to be admitted to. You have to prove that you are somebody.
Ah, I see.
And they allow you in because it's only for somebodies to date one another.
does somebody, can you qualify as a somebody by either income or attractiveness?
Someone I know who lives in a world where she feels like somebody and lives in a world of somebodies by their standards proposed to me that I join the league.
Yeah, you should do that. Give us your league. Give us your league username now here at the outro.
So I joined it.
Oh, perfect.
As a kind of lark. Let's see what happens if I join it. It's the same reason I joined the Sons of the Confederacy. No, I didn't really.
Former Ku Klux Klan member, John Roderick.
I joined it and it was very awkward for me to be on there because they would send me people like, hey, so-and-so is interested in you. And I would, you know, read her profile and she owned like a chain of yoga studios. And I'm like, your algorithm is wrong. That's not who's going to like me.
That was actually the least accomplished person they had. They tried.
Yeah. I was like, what you need to find is the manager of a dark cafe somewhere where they play goth music and where she like sneers at every customer. Like that's who my target audience is, not yoga people. So I stopped going on the league. I was there for about a week and a half just seeing what happened. But I'm probably at John Roderick there, so come by and
see me.
There
we go. I was waiting. He's also on Instagram.
I'm there too.
We had an email address where you can also contact John if you're a goth barista of some kind. Omnibusproject at howstuffworks.com. You can send him personal effects of a titillating nature at Omnibusproject, P.O. Box 55744. Shoreline, Washington.
Polaroids.
I'm not doing this outro anymore. Shoreline, Washington, 99155. And keep in mind that I have the deposit box key and I will see all your terrible incriminating stuff and put it online before John even gets to
it. For my eyes only. Also, our Facebook group, which is a chaste and moral place.
Unlike the P.O. Box.
Where smart, like-minded people can go on and discuss their various
Volsel activities.
That's right. Their hot takes. That is the Futurelings on Facebook. Omnibus Futurelings. Listeners, future Borgs and blobs, sentient blobs.
Blobs and Borgs, blobs or Borgs.
Blobs or Borgs. Borg blobs. From our vantage point in your presumably distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. It seemed when we started this podcast that our demise was imminent.
Yeah, how would you chart it? Do you feel like is it escalating at the rate you expected?
I mean, you know,
we're still here.
Since then, now our August skies are choked with smoke. Mm-hmm. But it seems like maybe our president is closer to impeachment, which you could say, you could make a case either way is evidence of, or rather a sign of impending doom.
It's true. Like one of these months, we could have a president with object permanence in the White House, which,
whoa,
it's been a while.
What would that be like?
Crazy.
Hey, I closed my eyes and opened them again, and this is still here.
Can't play peekaboo with them anymore.
But also, if he is successfully impeached, it's possible that his army of deplorables may rise up. And they typically have more guns.
They have more guns and more orange juice.
More guns, more orange juice, and more square miles of American land.
I thought you were going to say frugal flyer miles. I was like, that is not true.
They do not.
The left has way more sky miles than the right.
That is 100% true. But the left also are the ones that sit and take it when they don't get upgraded, when their miles become less and less valuable, when they're not even upgraded to economy comfort. The left just lays down and takes it.
This is getting a little too personal, I think.
Yeah, all right. Anyway, we hope and pray that whatever the catastrophe is that we fear may never come by whatever method. But if the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word. But if Providence, as you understand it, allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.